This morning I've headed west from Penrith, across the Blue Mountains, past Katoomba, past Lithgow and out to the Gardens of Stone National Park to meet with composer and pianist Amanda Handel and musician, didge player Michael Jackson. The Gardens of Stone is a national park within Blue Mountains World Heritage Area that's bordered by the Castlereagh Highway, which goes out to Mudgee, the Glen Davis Road and the Wallamaya National Park, the most well-known part of that being Nunes and Walgan Valley.
You're getting a lot of honey eaters in this particular area. New Holland honey eaters at the moment.
So I'm walking along the track at the moment to a lookout that Amanda's recommended we sit at to have a chat. I'm already out of breath, this is ridiculous, but it's just terrific. Walking over occasional little creek, sound of water in the background, birds flying overhead. I asked Amanda to describe what the park looks like.
Amazing views, huge distances and vast cliffs and rock formations in the shape of pagodas, which is what makes this national park so special. It's unique to the world.
Lots of intricate ironstone formations. I'm just looking over there. Incredible on the top of the escarpment there as it comes down and through the valley.
And lots of bush, lots of sky, and we just had a couple of black cockatoos fly over.
So, with all the places in the mountains, and, you know, there's so many gorgeous places in the mountains, how did you discover the Gardens of Stone?
I heard about it from Wyn Jones, who's a very famous environmentalist, and I happened to be teaching him the piano at the time. And as soon as he said to me, "Oh, I've got to take you out to the Gardens of Stone," and just immediately I thought, "Yes, yes, yes, I've got to go there. That sounds like music to me."
And how did you discover it, Michael?
With my dad growing up, we used to go out that way. And then I think in the mid-1990s I was doing an outdoor guiding certificate at TAFE and we went out there as well. So I'd been out there a few times.
The first place I went up was Donkey Mountain, which is very, 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 very steep and a really difficult climb, and went through a landslide, and, you know, it was actually very dangerous. Also, I wasn't really on the track you should have been. Once getting to the top, there's sort of like a labyrinth of private little areas right on top of the mountain, little caves and secret passages, and it just seems like another planet.
And I know Donkey Mountain that Amanda's talking about because I actually stayed once in the valley below there doing, you know, an archaeological dig. So we actually did an archaeological dig in the river below Donkey Mountain.
Because, of course, you're a musician all the time. You have this other side to you as well.
Yeah, I've had many things that I've done over my time, but archaeology is one of the things I do.
What was it about this place that gave you that inspiration? You went, you know, I've got to compose, I've got to create.
I think it was the shape of the rocks, actually, just their pagoda shapes. Because the harder part of the rock, the ironstone, doesn't weather, but the sandstone actually does weather. So over the course of time, and the sandstone eroding away, it leaves just lots of really strange, contorted, interesting patterns and colours.
Yeah. We're sitting on it now. We're sitting on a band of ironstone right here in the rock with these little jagged edges here, and the sandstone is kind of eroding away a bit quicker. But, I mean, Amanda's right, you just have to look at it and you can see all the colours in there, all the quartz shining, the different textures. It certainly evokes some sort of inspiration,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I love the contrast of the moss on the rocks. There's a lot of really dark, deep green. It's really soft. And then, you know, you put your hand on the rock itself, especially if you're trying to climb the mountain, and you find it's really rough and and it hurts. So that wonderful contrast of really deep, soft greens and then really grainy, scratchy, dry...
desert-like, isn't it?
Colours, yeah, and textures. So, you know, in music there's colour and texture and line and shape and form, just as there is in the landscape. And so I wanted, in writing this particular piece called Gardens of Stone, to translate that, you know, to bring those elements into sound waves.
I asked Amanda to explain a little bit how she likes to manipulate time and the concept of time, given the fact that Gardens of Stone is very much a timeless place and hasn't really changed all that much in a long period of time.
Let's say you appreciate the fact that the landscape has remained the same and it would have been for an awfully long time. Mm-hmm. And it's that, I'm drawn to that, I really like that. And in writing the music, it very much helps to keep a solid pitch. We call it a drone, and that's why the didgeridoo fits so well or serves that purpose so well.
Yeah.
It's because it holds down a constant tone around which all the decoration and colour and ornamentation that I play on the piano can, you know, emerge out of that drone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't been able to find any music composed for piano and didgeridoo.
As soon as Amanda suggested it, I was like, yes, of course. I've always known that this could work. I was impressed with Amanda's professionalism, and I knew that whatever came out of it would be equally professional.
And you don't just play the didgeridoo?
No, I play didgeribone as well, and that's an instrument that's not played by many people, but it is played throughout the world. It's a multi-pitch didgeridoo, so it's made from plastic, but it's two sliding pipes, and you can play 9 didgeridoo notes, so you can shift around quite quickly between the different notes.
Yep.
And if you change your embouchure, you can play it as a melodic instrument, and like a French horn. To instruments in a way. I enjoy the rhythmical side of the didgeridoo. I really respond to that. I'm probably a frustrated drummer in my past. But also I was a boy soprano, so I was always singing soprano pieces with the highly melodic. And the didgeribone, in a way, combined the two things for me, where I could actually shift from rhythmical, sort of quite technical sort of movements to melodic pieces, and quite sort of sweeping sort of melodic as well. So for me, I was always drawn to that, and there's not many people that play it like that throughout the world. There's probably only a handful. So it's also
really
a challenge.
Hard.
It's also very hard. It's also a very hard instrument to play, because the for a didgeridoo you need a wide mouthpiece, and so when you shift to playing a horn, you don't have the back pressure that you'd get from, say, a trumpet or a French horn or from those other instruments. So you have to strain and strain quite a bit to actually hit the higher notes.
So the concert is obviously a number of pieces put together.
Yeah. Well, it's not just this piece, Gardens of Stone, but the whole album, Gardens of Stone. A lot of the compositions are inspired by places in the Blue Mountains, or if not places... specific places, then some sort of natural phenomena. I guess the most eastern point would be the Blue Labyrinth, which is sort of King's Tableland and, you know, like Wentworth Falls area down east, near...
Just towards the Erskine, Bedford Creeks, all of that area. Yeah. That's the Blue Labyrinth country. I mean, it does head down to Penrith, and, you know, into that area. And then I suppose you're coming up the mountains, Kanimblamoon, into the Megalong Valley.
And then right over to the Gardens of Stone out near Lithgow. Yeah, there's lots of other compositions that aren't necessarily named by their places, but, you know, there's we're performing. Yeah, we're performing the whole album, which is 14 tracks.
And what other bits in the mountains have kind of inspired it, even if they haven't been named so much after that?
There's a little piece about bush flowers. The bush flowers, like, you know, they really burst out once spring comes, like all of a sudden they're there.
Yeah.
You know, they really have this way of bursting out. Australian flower is very hardy and very strong, and they're usually very small, so I don't know. I just tried to capture that in the music, this spikiness and dryness, and yet very impressive bursting out.
I play a didge solo on the yes. album. We both do a solo. Mine is called Bunburung. Bunburung is a local Aboriginal word for the mountain dragon. It's a little Jackie dragon lizards you see out in the bush all the time, everywhere. Yeah. And they scurry out from under your feet. In my work as an archaeologist, I've worked with a lot of local Aboriginal community, and one of the oldest, Uncle Merv Cooper, he's 97 this year, and he's often told me about Bunburungs, and he first came up because I showed him a photo of a Jackie Dragon lizard, and he called it the Bunburung. There's stories that were recorded about this lizard, and I thought, well, I'll come up with a didgeridoo solo which captures the spirit of the Bunburung. It's quick and agile movements, so it's a highly technical little thing. When you nearly tread on it, and it bolts underneath your feet and runs up and around into the forest, very well camouflaged. So my didgeridoo tries to capture the spirit of the Bunburung, and I dedicate that to Uncle Merv, he was over the moon by that.
I've got a couple of little pieces inspired by the Jenolan Caves. Two little pieces called River Cave and Stalactite. And so, you know, I'm thinking of the underground water system, just the elements of rock and water and, again, time and what happens over the course of time. So you've got this system running underground. And so the piece River Cave has got a really unusual rhythm of 5 plus 7 over 12 over 8. So there's 12 quavers in bar, but it's grouped in crotchets and dotted crotchets for the technical, you know.
So you've done this to make it hard for yourself.
Well, I don't know.
I think so.
Not really. It sounds it, but it really grooves. It really grooves along, but it's just not square because caves are not square.
Sublime music. I mean, it's not just a bunch of songs, you know. We talk about the timelessness of this landscape that we're in. I think that some of this music will also still be played. It's not a flash in the pan thing. It'll still be played in many, many years to come because Amanda has written it like that. It's certainly not just a concert as such, but it's a real experience. And what I would hope that people get out of it in a way is that it also reflects back not to sentimentality about the landscape or the bush, but to wanting to have a deeper experience, a deeper relationship with place and with this particular area, because it's through that real sort of protection of the landscape can occur, because people identify with places. We live a fairly disconnected life to the Gardens of Stone and to the whole Blue Mountains in a way. You know, our urban areas are very much the opposite of what's out there. And going out with people in the bush a lot, people have all sorts of amazing experiences because they're not familiar with it, and it's like a new experience, and it's a totally different environment. That sort of depth of relationship, you know, it takes a while, but when people form a relationship with place, and I think the music can actually help that and assist that process, well, then wonderful changes happen in yourself, to your own soul, and also you can bring about desire and identification with a place which you want to protect it as well. And it's not just reduced to a money value, but to a value for the soul and for society as a whole. So, in a way, I'm not making it too big, you know, but I just think that that's the impact it has for me, this music, and that's what I would hope to impart to other people.